Like the show? Want to listen to episodes early? Consider becoming a patron. Starting at the $3 a month level, patrons get access to a custom patron-only feed where we put out episodes of upstairs studio podcasts like the Childcare Bar and Grill, Miss Becky's Classroom, That Early Childhood Nerd, the Renegade Rules podcast, and others early. That feed is just for patrons. You could be one of them. Go to patreon.com/playvolutionhq or click the link in the show description to learn more. Childcare Bar and Grill podcast. Jeff Johnson here, coming live from Buster Studio. Lisa Murphy with me, Tasha Johnson with me. We're really trying to pump out the episodes today. Let's get going. We're under a lot of pressure to get some podcasts done. What's the topic for today, Lisa?
Pressure. Pressure and anxiety on teachers and, quote, there's no end in sight, end quote.
Okay, that made my anxiety go up just listening to that. It's like, I really got to pay attention. Shit.
That was acting.
Oh,
I was pretending to be under
so
pressure.
Good.
I was pretending to be hurried and under pressure and a little bit anxious about getting this show done. So what?
So we recently unpacked the burnout and turnover rate, and one of the suggested reasons for that from one of our Facebook contributors here is pressure and anxiety. That pressure and anxiety on teachers is one of the things that leads to a higher level of burnout. And I think we've talked a lot about pressure. We've talked a lot about stress. I also know that a lot of the stress and pressure can be perceived stress and pressure versus actual pressure.
Yeah, it's kind of self-imposed.
I think so. And the only reason why I say that is, well, there's probably lots of reasons why I say that, but how many times at a gig have we been like, what page is that on? And everybody thinks that they have this expectation, but yet nobody can show me where that actual expectation is coming from. And that's the only reason why I always will continue throwing down that it's perceived pressure.
Yeah.
I'm not taking away from the fact that you're feeling the pressure.
Yeah, totally.
But I'm trying to let you know that you might be occasionally doing it to your own bad self.
Yeah, I think maybe that's just kind of a temperament thing for some people too.
Maybe.
There are people that have a kind of, that's just where they live.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are other people that kind of have a lower pulse about
mm-hmm.
those kind of things
mm-hmm.
maybe. And I mean, the two of us, for example, one of us is a little bit more than the other. I'm not going to name names, but I mean, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm more of that person with the two of us is the personality.
Yeah, a little bit more.
I like to think I'm becoming a little more mellow.
Well, yeah, but yeah. And I think at the time we've hung out together, you have. But you just you're kind of wired to think about things more. And maybe that's what it is. Maybe you're just thinking more than I am.
You might be.
If I was actually thinking, maybe I'd worry and fret and be more anxious. But I think I think it's just kind of a personality thing.
It could be.
Oh,
and
definitely.
So I think maybe that's where that self-imposed comes from. But then again, what do we do about it?
Well, I think embedded in this suggestion of a topic is the ready. I think there's the sub message here is readiness. Readiness. I think the pressure to get them ready, the pressure, the anxiety of getting them ready. And I don't know if she didn't write that in there, but that's what I'm reading into this.
I would, I mean, I can agree with that because I see and hear that
Constantly.
That kind of. We were talking about our I want to create an app called the Subtext app. and what this is going to be, people, is this will be an app on your phone that any message you get, any meme you see on online, you can just swipe it into this app that I've created, and it'll give you the subtext
of what's
going on. What does it really mean? I think the app is, we're going to call it, what does she mean by that? Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a lot of this, that this app would come in handy with this, because I, that's a big piece of this. We feel that we're under so much pressure to get them ready that we push and we push and we push and rush. And I mean, my sound
without bite, asking, what do you mean by that?
Yeah.
I mean, Jeff
exactly.
And Tasha are probably really sick of like the things I bring every conversation back to, but I really, really, really think that's important.
If you're feeling
under pressure and stressed and anxiety to get kids ready, but nobody has painted you a picture of what they mean by that, you are running around with your chicken, like I had a chicken with your head cut off, and you don't even know why.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're living in a world where school readiness is made into some BFD, some big fucking deal, and it truly isn't. If you are listening to this podcast in a language that you're halfway familiar with, the definition of school readiness in virtually every place that English is a spoken language, I guess, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but all across the U.S. for sure, the true legal definition of school readiness is you are alive and have had a particular birthday by a particular date. Now, that birthday and that date may vary from state to state or province to province, but that's pretty much what the requirement for a child to enter school is.
Oh, and that's, I've said that for years, and it's the piece of the puzzle that nobody wants to acknowledge or talk about.
Yeah, and you can
legally the birthday, you gotta let them go.
And we can build on top of that, because there are people that want more stuff than that, but even those things are often exaggerated from what they really are. Most kindergarten teachers that I've talked to indicate that what they want kids to come to school ready to do is take care of their own physical needs, zip their own jacket, put
their own shoes on,
wipe their own butt, make it to the bathroom without peeing their pants, those kind of things, and then have some experience getting along with other human beings. And I mean, that for most kids most of the time is a pretty achievable benchmark.
Unless for the last 4 years they've been, you know, drilled and killed to death, and they know their shapes and they know their colors, and we've been overly paying attention to one piece of the developmental puzzle and have completely been ignoring, in the name of readiness, the ones social, emotional, and, you know, some physical.
Yeah, so what we seem to be doing in at least some situations is giving children the exact opposite of what they need to truly be ready for school.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to read you a piece of this article. I don't know if you've seen it. It's from the Olive Branch Preschool. And she wrote a blog post like 3 days ago called, Does Kindergarten Readiness Matter? And she said, first of all, what is it? We hear the buzz phrase, we think we understand the importance of it, but are you actually able to define it? And this, I love this piece right here. She said, so what we have here are our governing educational systems declaring the importance of, quote, kindergarten readiness, but yet not telling us what that is. Coining a phrase, but not defining it. Parents and teachers are stuck in a tizzy over this logical fallacy of circular reasoning, as we're simply being told that school readiness is important because children need to be ready for school.
Yeah, and I mean that would get my systems don't care tag.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Because
exactly.
We don't know what the fuck we're talking about, or we can't define what we're talking about, but we keep talking about it.
That would
be a good tagline for this podcast. We don't know what we're talking about, but we keep talking about it.
And that's why, and I started saying this a couple years ago, I refuse to engage in a readiness conversation if the person sitting across the table from me does not have the ability to define it. So what would that look like from an advocacy lens if everybody in the industry did that?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that? And if the person doesn't know, but yet I am quite well versed in DAP and best practice in the research, So I'm going to continue engaging in best practice until you've got something showing that what I'm doing is actually incorrect. We're going to err on the side of me implementing best practice, and until you got something other than ready, I'm going to err on the side of thinking that I'm confident in knowing that I know what I'm doing.
Yeah. Now we've looked at this topic of pressure and anxiety, and we've kind of diagnosed it as being a readiness issue. But I think we should turn back to those symptoms and the symptoms of pressure and anxiety, and dissect those a little bit more.
So
and,
tell
as
me.
Far as managing them, I think, whatever the reason you're feeling pressure and anxiety in the classroom, and I mean, readiness can be a big part of it. The pressure from children or from parents, quality rating systems, accreditation programs, whatever it is, whatever is causing it. Or I mean, maybe we're kind of reading in kind of external factors. A lot of people bring those things on themselves for internally. They're just kind of wired for that, we touched on, but you're still feeling it. And so how do you deal with it when you're feeling pressure or anxiety, Lisa Murphy? Just because because I think in this episode we can kind of diagnose this might be why, and we can't do anything to fix it, but maybe we can come up with some tips for individuals listening for dealing with those things when they feel.
It's going to sound like I'm beating the dead horse. My first suggestion is going to be, let's do some digging and find out if what you feel this pressure to be doing is actually a requirement. And does that mean looking at your licensing regs? Does that mean having a conversation with your principal, with your administrator, with your coworker? Let's figure out, and whatever individual example it might be, that we have to be outside at 10 o'clock. Okay, is that true?
Yeah.
Is there truth in it?
Yeah.
Because there might be occasionally, the non-compromisables, the pressure to, be outside at 10 o'clock. That maybe actually exists. Okay, fine. So there's one that's non-compromisable. But maybe then that means that there are other pressures that I'm perceiving that aren't as, hardcore, that I can be a little bit more flexible on.
Yeah, so do the reading. That's going to...
What's the worst possible thing that's going to happen if we don't do some of this stuff?
Yeah, and in... I have a hard time thinking of an example of somebody who's done the reading and found things to be worse than they expected or worse than they were imagining, and have led them to be more anxious and more stressed.
Usually
it's the opposite.
It.
Usually it creates a moment of decompression. And so taking the time to really do the reading and look at the foundations is a good antidote to those feelings of pressure and anxiety.
And not to be a dick about it, but if you're not willing to actually do that, like if right now the tool in your tool belt is like, oh no, it's licensing, man, all this licensing pressure, and you've not taken the time to read the regs, I don't think you have the right to be bitching.
Well, I mean, some people choose to live with those feelings. That's what they're used to and that's what they choose. So yeah, absolutely. I would suggest though, before you go in and do that reading, do your homework, that you take some time to get your head in a better place. Because if you're going into the regs stressed and anxious and feeling pressured, you're gonna have a different experience with them, and you're not going to be as mindful and thoughtful. So, I mean, my whole thing, and this goes back to, we talked a little bit about burnout last time, is you got to fucking start taking care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And
this is a theme already.
Yeah. And I mean, I've been preaching about this for 15 or 20 years.
20 years, probably.
And that makes me feel very much older than I feel that I am. But I mean, it's a thing. And the cold, hard truth is, I can talk to a room of 100 people about the fact that you need to take care of yourself if you want to feel better. And if 2% of them actually start doing something and stick to it, I see that as a win. And so, like you say, a lot of people are choosing to not read the regs. A lot of people are choosing not to take care of themselves. And so that leaves me thinking that those feelings of pressure and anxiety are self-imposed.
Well, and also, that also goes back to trauma-informed care. And, if your neural pathway, and it's not really a neural pathway, but just follow where I'm going with the analogy. If the smoothest path in your brain defaults to That's where it's going to go. And so to change that connection takes a lot of work. It is quicker, faster, and easier to go down the path, to go down the experience that is well-worn. It doesn't matter how traumatic or dysfunctional it might be.
We are creatures of habit.
We are. We are. And we will do what we know. And unless you chart to change it, which is hard work. Hard work. Taking care of yourself. I mean, you hear that a lot. Self-care, we hear it, and I'm not undermining it in any way, manner, shape, or form. But it's hard.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. If it was easy, we'd all weigh what we wanted, and we'd be fit, and we'd be our best selves. And
all the time.
All the time, and most of us have to work at that.
And I know that we often... Or I'll speak for my own self. I can often be very guilty of plopping in a soundbite or defaulting to like a hashtag sounding thing. But the truth is, at least through my lens, is that they're true. That's why they're soundbites. And the not being able to fill from an empty cup, that really resonates with me. You know, and for a while, everybody was saying, though, the flight attendant, you always put the oxygen mask on yourself before you help somebody else. And at the, at first when I was like, well, duh, that makes a lot of sense. But it's not always what we do, especially in this profession. And you're an expert on this. We will always go and take care of other people before turning in and making sure that we have what we need in order to do that long term.
Yeah, yeah. And so when it comes to the pressure and anxiety, I mean, if you're suffering is the right word. If you're suffering from it, because it does feel like suffering. I've spent plenty of time there. The only way it gets different is if you make a change. And so more and better self-care is one path for change. Becoming more familiar, more aware of the rules that govern the game you're playing, the game of early learning, being more aware of those is going to help relieve some of those if you let it. But it all starts with you as an individual doing a thing. And then doing that thing again and making that a habit. And again, we've touched on this a couple times in the show over 550 episodes, but even in this episode we've touched on it. It involves you getting started, and it's hard and it's challenging. Example, this year I decided I was going to do two things. We're coming up at the end of 2019. Not New Year's resolutions, but my plans were I'm going to walk. I'm going to average 20,000 steps a day. For me, that's just a little over 8 miles a day. And I'm going to walk into the fucking gym in my house more often. Because
have no excuse.
I walk by it. Well, now that I've moved the studio, the studio is a different life, I don't walk by it as often. But okay, and so both of those require Jeff reprogramming himself. And so the walking thing, I'm on track. Now we're sitting down to pod week, and I'm gonna end up behind a little bit, but then I'm gonna have 6 weeks before the end of the year to catch up, and I will end up with over 20,000 steps a day for the year, and that's gonna make me feel good. The gym thing, I'm struggling with. And I went through 2.5 months where I was getting in there 5 times a week and could feel the difference. Mm-hmm. And then I had to go to town for a gig for a couple days. And the habit fell out of my head. And then I got back and I was like, I got to go out of town again in a week or two. And if I start, then I'm going to stop, and then I'm going to beat myself up, so I'm going to wait. And then pod week was coming. and I'm like, oh, fucking Lisa Murphy. Fucking Lisa Murphy's going to come, and I'm not going to make it to the gym. And so now Lisa leaves Monday early afternoon.
You can run me back Sunday.
No, the plan is Monday late afternoon, early evening, I get my ass back in the gym, because then the chart is clear for a while, and I can get back to that. That's what the plan is. And so part of me is patting myself on the back for the walking side of things, and part of me is pulling myself apart for failing on the other thing, and it's hard.
And then the next step, though, would be the next time in studio together that we carve out the time, whether that means me going out on a walk or a run or you going into the gym. And so that I would offer that is a suggestion and a challenge for next time is that we don't put on pause what we've been doing just because
it's carve out the 30 to 60 minutes to do that.
Yeah,
but sitting around the fireplace with cocktails is also delightful.
And reminiscing,
I mean, it's all day.
Yeah. It's kind of a vacation mindset we're in right now.
It is a vacation mindset, and that's true.
And I think it's hard.
It is hard. I also wanted to add, I had a thought while you were talking about some of that pressure and anxiety, because we'll see children's behavior or their abilities, quote unquote, perhaps as a reflection on us as people. And I think sometimes that competition might get in the way too, or would add to it. I don't know. There was something specific that you said, and I wrote it down, is that somehow, you know, the kids being able to count to 100 in 6 languages, you know, does that make me a better teacher?
Yeah. Yeah.
Am I comparing myself?
Yeah,
to other people in the building. Mm-hmm. And if I've drunk the Kool-Aid of thinking that because they get all these things, quote, right on a checklist, that somehow that's a reflection on my ability, even though that might go totally against what you say you believe in, which is more an open-ended play environment.
Yeah, yeah, I think...
It is hard.
Another piece of this is, if you are walking into your classroom or your home at the end of the day to your own family and children with a pressured, anxious mindset, you're radiating that to everybody you come in contact with. And I talk to caregivers about this when I'm talking about burnout. If you're walking into your classroom stressed and anxious and frustrated
and
run down,
kids will meet you there.
They're gonna mm-hmm. join you. And so a lot of times when the kids are quote unquote climbing the walls, it's not so much about the kids. It's about that emotional state that you're bringing into that environment, because they totally read that. Mm-hmm. Their welfare and survival literally depends on the mindsets of their caregivers. And so children are wired to tune in and read that. And they're very, very good at it. I talk about, you know, we walk around with happy face masks on a lot of the time, and kids see right through that mm-hmm. stuff. And so another reason deal with your stuff.
I'm fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Kids are like, you're bullshitting me.
Yeah, and so
lying.
Another reason we need to deal with our stuff is that it impacts everybody we come in contact with, and that starts this negative spiral, because if you bring that into the classroom and the kids, that it creates this feedback loop where you respond to what they're doing and they respond to how you respond, and it starts this downward spiral where the emotional environment and that setting gets all fucked up. And it's just a hard place to be. And yet people don't change. I mean,
it's familiar.
Yeah. And I mean, I've tried on the Playvolution HQ site I run. We've tried doing, one thing I put out a little over a year ago. I tried it for the last time, cause I've kind of given up, is okay, we'll set up a closed group discussion area for people who are dealing with this, who need a support system. And I will just give my time to be in there and responding and commenting if people want a kind of safe haven to talk about these things instead of Facebook, where everybody's fucking judging you. And nobody wants that, because, I mean, they're involved in other things, and that's cool. But
do you think sometimes that it was a short tune, what we would call back in the day, like it was an acute situation? Like maybe I only needed to have 2 kind of intense conversations with somebody, and then maybe I figured something out and I've moved on and made some changes.
Totally.
It might not be an ongoing, what we'd call a chronic issue.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
But yeah, my experience always, for most people, actually make being able to do something like that short term and make a real lasting change is a very difficult thing. Because again, we talk about how change is hard and there's that rewiring, that it's something that takes weeks and months more than mm-hmm. those instant
the
conversations.
Consistency.
But I think it's a new habit.
I mean, how many, mm-hmm. there's tons of statistics about that, right?
Yeah.
You have to hear it 7 times before you start to internalize it. You have to make it, 6 weeks, I think, you have to engage
and
in
that's
new
probably
behavior.
Bullshit, because you can make it a new habit and then it falls off after the road trip comes up.
Yeah, true.
But another piece of this is when people are feeling that pressure and anxiety, they often turn to what I call empty calorie self-care. Mm-hmm. And I just did a post on and video on Playvolution HQ about this. It's that thing where, you know, you go home at the end of the day and you're feeling that way and you sit down with a bag of Doritos and watch 6 hours of Netflix. Or you decide you're going to eat a little bit of chocolate.
But
and then
you get up the next day and then you feel guilty and now you fall back into that self-abuse.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so we eat chips and watch Netflix and eat chocolate and think we're going to have one cocktail and then have six or spend hours scrolling social media, judging and feeling judged. And it might make you feel better in the short term, but long term, it's not doing what knowing the regulations and taking kind of more effective care of yourself would result in. So, I mean, I don't know if that's the answer the poster was looking for. And it'd be great if there was a simple solution to that pressure and anxiety. But the truth is you got to do the work.
And I think this comes under the heading of doing the work, is realizing that there are some things you just simply aren't the boss of. You know, if you're trying to be in control of something that at the end of the day you have literally no control over, you're making yourself stressed and anxious unnecessarily.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So save it. I mean, because, you know, feeling stressed occasionally leads to good action and leads to positive change.
Yeah, stress is in of itself bad.
Right? We know that. We've unpacked the Harvard, the toxic stress and the good stress and then the workable stress. And anyway, but you have to be able to take the time to pause and reflect on it. Am I using up a lot of emotional, psychological energy trying to control something that at the end of the day save it. Save that stuff for the stuff that you do have an impact on.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, the reality is the only thing we have control over in most situations is how we respond to them. And some people don't even know that they have that choice. They just think their responses are automatic. But I mean, you can choose. You have the choice over how you respond in situations. A lot of times you don't feel you have that choice, but it does exist. Any more on this one before we wrap it up?
I think we're good. Plus the music went off.
This has been the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. We will be back soon with another episode. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for sharing the show with a friend or, you know, an enemy. I mean, it doesn't have to be a friend. We just want to put it in more people's ears. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.